trying to recall some of the humorous and other events that took place aboard the USS North Carolina from her commissioning date until I left her a week before Iwo Jima. First of all, there always seemed to be a waiting line at most enlisted men's heads. To shorten the wait, on more than one occasion, we would set fire to some balled-up tissue and let it flow under the men reading books or just taking too long to relieve themselves on the trough-type latrines. This caused many a warm, if not singed, buttocks, but it did afford a seat for the next man if he was fast enough to gain the hastily vacated seat of his predecessor. I recall, as officer of the deck's electrician, one of the many dark nights when it seemed as though our entire perimeter task force was banging away at either bogeys or some other enemy sighting, and we weren't firing at all on this particular night, Mr. Ward, our gunnery officer, was standing just forward of the pilot house when Captain Thomas asked, "God damn it, Mr. Ward, why aren't we firing?" Mr. Ward replied, "We have no target, sir." Captain Thomas then said, "Well, fire anyway, God damn it, scare 'em." On other dark nights, we used to wait for the mess attendants, who I swear had night blindness, to bring coffee and to the bridge. It was a simple task to remove cake, cookies, coffee, and other goodies from the tray they were carrying before they ever made it to the pilot house. We always saved a little for the officers, and in fact, very little. I will always remember my pets, George, my cat, who I pulled out of the bay at Noumea. And, well, Knight was our ship's photographer, and he made up a Liberty card for him, George, that is. And George lived with me in the lighting shop for over a year, and then went over the hill when we reached Seattle. I also took a liking to quite a few lizards, much to the dismay of our CPO, Walden. It wasn't uncommon to be reading or writing letters home or making out reports and have one of the lizards peer at you over a book and or papers. Death of any lizard was a very solemn affair, with taps played on the mouth organ by Allen of the sheet metal shop and burial of said lizard over the side in a miniature flag-draped matchbox. Services were usually held at night so that anyone in their right mind didn't think we were bucking for a Section 8. Listening to some of these stories, you might think we drank a lot. Well, perhaps so. Walt Doran, Neil Sejostrom, and I used to whip up some great cherry wine. It was made from leftover juice of the canned cherries. The bakers used the cherries for delicious cherry pies that we had from time to time. Obtaining the cherry juice, special cakes, cookies, starch pockets, shirt fronts, and other special privileges is a story in itself, which I will tell you about later. Back to the cherry juice. Sugar and yeast were fairly easy to come by, and we would put 2 cups of sugar and some yeast in a glass gallon jug of cherry juice and seal it with a small rubber hose into another glass jug containing water. The cherry juice would be allowed to ferment for about a month. The gases would bubble off into the water-filled jug, thus preventing any telltale odors. We usually run off approximately 10 to 15 gallons of perhaps not the finest wine, but wine nevertheless. Each month we did this. I remember Harry the Horse Gallagher, Sigelman third class, got to feel a wee bit under the weather one night and had to be assisted to his bunk. He slept in the Marine quarters in one of the top sacks. During the night he was a bit sick. Unfortunately, as I said, he slept in one of the top sacks. He did quite a job on all those below him, and with only battle lights on in the compartment, every Marine that was sprayed thought that Harry was having a hemorrhage. They awakened the duty doctor and rushed him to sick bay. His examination was brief and punishment was swift, and this sort of curtailed the little old winemakers for a while. The next experiment was with pure grain alky, but the medical department had added a foul-tasting ingredient known as Pink Lady, running it through loaves of bread and mixing it with large amounts of pineapple juice did no good until the blacksmith from the sheet metal gang devised a way. I believe he was from the hills in Tennessee. He suggested we pour about a pint of alcohol, laced with the Pink Lady, of course, into a metal pot, large enough to accept an empty GI sugar bowl. The pot, alky, with a sugar bowl, would be placed on an electric hot plate, and before the contents would come to a boil, a lid would be placed upside down on the pot. The concave of the lid was filled with cracked ice. When the contents come to a boil, the steam would rise, hit the cold lid, and run down into the sugar bowl, pure grain alky again. It worked great, and I'm sure it was the start of many a great ulcer. I'm sure you've heard of our famous toucan warm beer parties on the Fijis and Marshall Islands. Well, we added a little zest to them, too. Warm beer really was not our thing, so we used to bring sugar and yeast over with us. The sugar and yeast was waterproofed in numerous prophylactic safeties that we had no other use for. We would poke out two of the three eyes in many coconuts, and we inserted our yeast and sugar into the coconut milk, allowed to ferment until we returned a few weeks later. It made a powerful, evil-tasting liquid refreshment. I'm sure some of the atoll explosions heard in later years were caused by catches of our never-returned-to supplies. As I mentioned, it was sometimes difficult to obtain some of the ingredients we needed for winemaking, cakes, cookies, etc., for midnight parties, starch pockets and collars for our shirts, and other special privileges until we hit on this great idea. The servicing of bulkhead ventilation fans was one of our many duties. Servicing one of these fans usually took only a very short time, but when you needed some yeast or cake or cookies, or your clothes starched, or your hair trimmed and not sheared, or some canned fruit, or some other special privileges, we could take an awful lot of time if things were not forthcoming. The conversations usually went like this. Hey, Sparks, where the hell are you going with that fan? We can't breathe down here. Sorry, buddy, it has to go in for repairs. When are you getting it back? Remember earlier when I asked for that cake and you said no can do? Well, buddy, perhaps we could rush things or give you a loaner if. At this point, there was usually a gentleman's agreement and the party would go on as scheduled, or our shirts would be pressed and starched, or our other special privileges would be granted. Power was a great thing, fan power, that is. The diary I'm including with this tape starts on April 15th, 1942. And we had logged at that time 32,664 miles since April 9th in 1941. The book, the diary I should say, are my feelings. It'll show the love of my future wife that I had for her. There are some emotional things in there that possibly you won't want to print, but might want to read. There's a situation about our torpedoing. There's a situation about the nurses coming aboard in Noumea. And I'll mark the book for the parts where it starts. And it jumps back and forth. It goes from about the center of the book and then sort of buzzes back toward the front. Unfortunately, as I've written in the book, the rest of the diary was either misplaced and or stolen. I don't know which, but I just want to say it was really a great life. I enjoyed it. if you can enjoy that sort of thing. It was a great ship, the BB-55 USS North Carolina. She was one of the best. I loved her and the men that served aboard her. We'll see you next year.